This is Japan Baseball Weekly, the only English podcast covering all 12 NPB teams. And now, your hosts, John E. Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of May 10th. I'm John Gibson, and with me at the usual time on a Sunday night is my partner, Jim Allen. How you doing, buddy?
Not too early, not too late, right in the groove, baby.
Yeah. Well, don't groove too many of them. I'll pick your sorry pitches out of the park.
Hashtag, I wish.
You're always the one who says you can't throw anyway.
They'd have to get to the plate in the air first for you to do that.
Hey, man, I can hit it off the bounce.
No, I was going to say, no fair hitting it off the bounce like Munetaka Murakami did today. That's not
fair. I didn't see that. All right. Well, everybody keep masking up and hunkering down. And as the numbers go up in Tokyo and they keep mumbling about this thing called the Olympics, let's just stay healthy. That's all I have to say about it. All right. On this week's show, we've got a chat with Hanshin hurler Joe Gunkel. We're going to discuss the top performers in both leagues, talk about some of the import players not coming to MPB to play this year, and a whole bunch more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
All right. So this interview is from April 29th, and I was able to sit down on the phone and talk to Joe Gunkel, the second year right-hander with the Hanshin Tigers. And, you know, all he knows about playing in Japan and NPB is the coronavirus era. He got here last year for camp and that was semi-normal. And then we had the start, the stop, the restart, and all through coronavirus situations and no fans, empty stadiums, partially filled stadiums, mostly quiet playing environments. And that's all Joe Gunkel knows about NPB, no matter what he saw in video and what he has seen on tape of past games from decades gone by or years gone by. All he knows is pretty much quiet stadiums and not very many people. But he has started out fairly well this season. Now, the record is 5-0. Today, he didn't really seem to have it going, and he left after three innings in Yokohama against DeNA. But Kosuke Baba came on, and he had a really strong relief effort. And my man, Yoshio Itoi, blasted a home run, a two-run shot, and they won 3-2. And Joe is still 5-0. And he's not overpowering, guys. He does a lot of what Japanese pitchers do, and that's spin the ball and locate it and limit the mistake pitches. And you'll hear him explain his success this year and discuss a number of topics. So let's have a listen to Joe Gunkel.
All right. So thank you very much again for your time. Really appreciate it.
Sure.
How did you end up making the jump to MPB?
I think it was my last couple of years in America. It was kind of something that I wanted to do, to come out and play in Asia, whether it would be Korea or Japan. I just kind of stuck where I was in America, you know, pitching well, not really getting an opportunity that I, you know, to get called up. So, you know, my agent had always said that, you know, it's always a possibility to go out to either Japan or Korea. And I just thought it'd be a cool experience to kind of come experience a different kind of baseball. And, you know, thankfully I've had, you know, some success last year and I've started the year out well here. So it's been a pleasant experience for the most part, minus coronavirus.
Yeah, that has really changed a lot, especially the way you and I are talking right now. Right. Now, not many people say the term crafty right-hander, but velocity is really a priority in the States, and then but yet they talk about the necessity to have movement on your pitches and keeping the batters off timing-wise. So you, I would say, how would you describe yourself as a pitcher?
I'd say I'm pretty aggressive. I like to throw a lot of fastballs and sinkers, but I also am able to mix in, you know, my breaking pitches in the strike zone. So I'm kind of like to be aggressive with all my pitches to both righties and lefties.
Mm-hmm.
I obviously have a little more tendency to be better and more aggressive against righties, and I think that's just naturally because of where I throw the ball. It makes it a little harder for them to pick up. I'm someone that likes to attack the strike zone. I want to work fast and keep my infielders involved, keep the ball on the ground.
Okay, now you pitched a lot out of the bullpen for the Tigers. I would say more last year than you did as a starter.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
No, but you're in the rotation this year, so how did that come about?
So last year, I started out in the rotation and kind of struggled once we kind of restarted the whole second spring training, and my first start wasn't very good. So it kind of sent me down to work on my my command and my breaking pitches. And they needed another bullpen guy. I think it was in mid-July.
Mm-hmm.
We had some bullpen injuries. So, they just needed another arm, and I came in and I threw well my first, handful of outings. So they kind of kept me in there, and I was working well. I was working in some high leverage situations. Towards the end of the year, one of our other foreigners, Edwards, got healthy. So they wanted to give him a look. So they wanted to look at me in the rotation because I'd been throwing well. And I had a good start or two and a couple of so-so starts. And coming into this year, they kind of signed me to be, I thought when I signed to be a depth guy because they knew I could do both.
Mm-hmm.
And I threw really well in spring training and exhibition games. So, they gave me a shot in the rotation to start the year. And I've thrown the ball really well through the first five.
Yeah, now you are obviously atop the Central League. I guess Takahashi of the Giants won yesterday, so he's 5-0. But you're right there. And it seems like you're throwing more strikes and getting less hard contact and better results off the bat. Now, what has changed for you between this year and last year?
I think this year I've just been really good at a lot better at keeping the ball in the middle of the plate. A lot of my strikes are in good zones. I'm not making a ton of mistakes over the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think my breaking pitches are a little crisper. My cutter has been a good pitch for me this year, where in years past it's kind of just been a third pitch, kind of something a little extra to throw a guy off, where this year I've been attacking both right-handed and left-handers with my cutter. And then I think my control of my forkball has gotten better, so I've been able to throw that more around the zone. I think putting it all together has helped me, one, stay ahead of guys and kind of keep guys off balance and keep them from just looking for the heater.
Yeah. So you're off to a pretty good start. The team is also doing well. To what do you attribute this strong start?
I think we've gotten, quality play out of everybody. Our defense has been playing really well. Our bats have been hot for the majority of the games, and our starting pitching has been throwing really well, and our bullpen's been sturdy. So it's kind of been a full team effort. I wouldn't say that any one part of the team has been better than the other. I think we needed that to come out of the gate strong, especially with a team like the Giants that was kind of waiting for their other formers. Unfortunately, they lost teams the other day, but
right,
that's the team we're going to go toe to toe with all year. They're a really good team, so I think it was important for us to get off to a good start.
Yeah, two plate appearances for Thames, and then he's gone. But
yeah.
What did it mean to have most of your foreign imports? Or your foreign players here from day one?
Right, yeah, I think that gave us a huge boost just to be able to fill out the lineup. We probably started the year with one of the better lineups, power-wise. And all of our foreigners are familiar with the team and this side of the league, so it kind of helped us hit the ground running. There wasn't any adjustment period. Everybody was, ready to go from the start.
Now, everybody seems to have an opinion about Teruaki Sato, your prized rookie there. What's your opinion of him?
He's a good kid. He works hard. He's real humble. He puts some good swings in the ball. I think the more he sees this pitching, the more comfortable he's going to get with it. His discipline in the strike zone will get better, but you know, he's got some big time power. And, you know, if a pitcher makes a mistake, he makes him pay. And I think that the more he plays in this league and at this level, the better he's going to get about, you know, finding his spots to make, you know, good contact and be more disciplined in the strike zone.
Yeah, I've heard guys talking about his swing and his patience, and I remember seeing in the preseason the guy in the weight room without his shirt, and he's a beast.
Yeah, he's a special player. He gets a lot of attention, and you know sometimes that's tough for a young kid, you know, being on the front page of the paper every day. But you know, he's very humble. He's very hardworking. So. With his kind of mindset, I think that you know he'll turn out to be a pretty special player.
Now, you said I wanted to go back to this. You said you're going to probably be going toe to toe with the Giants all season long in terms of trying to, you know, battle for a top spot or a playoff spot. You didn't get an opportunity to go up against the Pacific League last year in Interleague. How do you see that league, and what's your opinion of having Interleague play this year?
Yeah, not too super familiar with it. I have a couple friends on the Buffaloes, so. But from what I've heard, you know, it's a hitters league. You know, they got a lot of good hitters. We played Oryx in the preseason. I got my butt kicked by the Fighters last year in the exhibition games too. So they can for sure swing the bat on that side of the league. It'll be interesting to see once. Where is it? June or July? I think June when we get to play them, kind of. Going through the tapes and seeing how to approach different hitters. And I don't know a ton about them, but I just know that good hitters league, they got some good arms over there too.
All right. Now, I wanted to get into this family situation because in the preseason, I saw a tweet from a fan talking about a player saying that they're getting paid a lot and they shouldn't complain. And this was a player on the Lotte Marines saying that, you know, don't complain. You've got the opportunity to come over and make a lot of money. And I, you know, as much as I could on Twitter shouted, no. These are people before they're players, and the family is one unit. So a player talking about the fact that he couldn't be with his family, that's part of him missing on the field. So what's the situation with your family?
Yeah, I don't have any children. It's just my wife and I. But
okay,
she was over here for a little bit last year before you know all the coronavirus stuff happened. And at the time, she is a teacher, and she had to go back because we, you know, there's so much uncertainty in the beginning of the coronavirus. We didn't know what was going on, so we weren't sure if she was going to go back to school or if she was going to. Get stuck here, so we made the decision to send her back, and you know she didn't have a visa then. So when we signed the contract, so I didn't see her from probably April last year until the end of the season, which was, you know, tough. It was a long time. And then during contract, when we're talking about the contract for this year, it kind of says like, you know the visa situation looks good right now, we'll hopefully be able to get it. And you know, by the time end of December came around, they shut it down again. It's been hard for, I'm sure, a lot of guys in this league because, you know, no one wants to be away from their family. When you're at the field, like, you can kind of distract yourself, like, being around the guys. But once you get home, like, it's just, you miss having someone there with you and you miss having someone to share things with. And,
right.
It's been tough for everybody, especially the guys that were here last year. Have to go through it all over again.
And so what's your wife's status now?
She is, she's just waiting to come over, waiting to get a visa. We had the paperwork, right after they shut the borders down, we got the paperwork. So we're just waiting for an opportunity for them to, you know, issue the visa and accept applications. And then she'll be able to come over whenever they allow her over.
Sure, and this is not a thing that the teams actually could control or do. It just happened to be, in some instances, I guess, dumb luck, because we did a talk with Brandon Laird earlier this season, and he just said, well, he never turned in his residence card, and he had his contract, and he had his visa, so he was able to just come back, and he's
right,
here
yeah,
with his
so,
family.
Yeah, so, like, since I had a visa last year, they just had us fill out a re-entry permit when we left last year.
Mm-hmm.
That pretty much kept us able to come back from whenever we got over here last year, that first day we landed. A year after that, we were able to come back in with the re-entry permit and the residence card. But as far as, like, you just can't get it. You can't get a new one right now. Like, you can't get a new visa. You can't get a new residency right now.
Right, they're doing that. All right. Certainly appreciate your time and wish you health and good luck the rest of the season.
All right, thank you.
All right, big thanks to Joe for his time, and also to the Hanshin PR people. Thank you very much, everybody on that side. So, backdoor sliders. Anything hit you in the foot there?
No, I'm going to stick with the regular. I'm going to stick with the stuff in the strike zone, because that was really, you know, I won't say I was running his numbers. I let Delta Graphs do all my hard work for me.
Oh, okay.
So I was looking at, you know, comparing what he did this year, and he looks like, you know, the same pitcher. All his pitches are a little more effective. And almost mm-hmm. when I listened to him talk about his season last year, I worked on this, I worked on that, I came in working on this. I'm going, yeah, that's what it looks like. You know, more strikes. You know, I don't have his counts, but it looks like he's getting. You know, when you see guys who get weaker contact, it's usually because you know, it could be for lots of reasons. It could be because their pitch quality is really good. Or it could also be the guys just being unable to settle on, you know, what pitch to look for. And if you're, if you're ahead in the count, then you have that luxury. And if you can get ahead in counts and establish that you can throw all your pitches in the strike zone,
mm-hmm.
then the batter is just up there guessing. And That's not a good way to get a positive outcome.
Right, unless you sit on something and it happens to come and it's in a good location. Yeah,
exactly.
I agree.
I mean, we do see that a lot in Japan, where guys go up, you know, the 190 hitter hits three home runs a year, you know, saying, I'm going to basically look for a curve because he throws them in this situation and he hasn't thrown one all day. So this is the pitch. I'm going to wait for a curve. And then when he throws it, even though it's a pretty good one, I'm going to hit it over the center field fence like nobody's business. So
right,
we see that about once a week in Japan. So yeah, so I looked at that and I saw that when I heard his explanation, I think, yeah, that is right. The only surprise was, you know, what's good about the Hanshin Tigers? And he gave us, you know, he Zealous Wheelered us. Everything's good. Everybody's equally good. It's the Lake Wobegon answer. Everybody's above average.
Yeah, I hear you, but he's basically right this year. I mean, no team is perfect, and every team has its wars. Yeah, but they're pretty good.
If he is wrong, which he probably is, because it's never nothing's that simple. He's not wrong by much.
Yeah, I agree. Because they're pretty good. So, but yeah,
and I did like the characterization of Teru. I wonder how much he gets Teruaki Sato. I certainly don't have any insight to him. But seeing how much Sato talks to Jerry Sands, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, what he says to Jerry Sands is also related, you know, the good points, you know, our teammates' qualities has not been related to the other import players on the team.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. Okay. For me, I heard a backdoor slider in there, and that was, and again, I guess when you have the Yomiuri Giants, and I think they're world renowned anyway, but most guys know, I would say before you come to Japan or the first time you learn about Japanese baseball, I would say maybe 8 out of 10 times you learn about the Yomiuri Giants if you live overseas. And I mean, I'm not dismissing, and I don't think Joe was dismissing the likes of the Bay Stars or the Swallows or any of the other Central League teams. I just think that people just don't really know about the other teams because the Giants are a marquee team. And so when he pointed at the Giants and said, they're the team we're going to go toe-to-toe with through probably down to the wire in the season, I don't think he was really taking a shot at the Central League teams. I think the Giants came into the season with having signed Justin Smoke and Eric Thames. We know that Thames is gone now with injury, but I think they just have, they're the big gun. And I don't think he was not intimidated by the likes of the other teams. The Carp can score runs. Obviously the Bay Stars can score runs. The Swallows are coming along. Maybe the Dragons are not the run scoring team, but they're leading Japan right now in team ERA. So, I mean, you still have to pitch well if you're going to face them. So I didn't think it was one of those sliders or a pitch that was out of bounds or anything, because I think most guys just tend to know that team better. Regardless of where you sign in Japan, when you hear that there might be some interest from Japan, or you think about NPB, or you hear something about Japanese baseball, I think the Giants do come to mind for a lot of guys. So I don't think that was anything to think about too deeply. And then you brought up Sato, and I think being when Joe said being on the front page of the daily sports or the newspapers every day is just a big thing for a young guy, a young player, a young kid. And, you know, I don't think that's something that fans ponder a lot. You know, you see your favorite player in the newspaper, or you see a popular player on a sports daily or something, you know, let's say 5 days out of the week, you just think, oh, well, that guy's good. It's only natural. He belongs on the front page of the paper. You know, he's that good, or he's that popular, or he's that dude. But for a young player who's still a rookie, who came in, you know, obviously with the home runs that he hit in the preseason, came into the regular season with a lot of hype, hit a home run out of Yokohama Stadium, you know, the first series he played there, and then came back and almost did it again this past week. And he's leading the Central League in home runs and or tied for the lead. And I mean, that is a big deal. I mean, you know, you start as a young guy, I would imagine you start to see yourself on TV all the time. You see yourself in the newspapers all the time. It can really be distracting toward your goal. If you're on the path toward a particular goal, you can get distracted and start falling in love with yourself. You know what I mean? because everybody else is falling in love with you. Why wouldn't you fall in love with you a little bit more and not work as hard or not do. I mean, for me, it would probably be the opposite. It would probably fuel me more, but I mean, it's a difficult thing to process, I would imagine, for younger players. But the good thing about Sato is he's not straight out of high school doing all this. He is a little bit of a more seasoned player, a little bit older. So, but I really loved that comment from Joe, because, and it turns out that, I talked to, like I said, this interview was April 29th, and Joe threw a few days later after this interview, and Sato hit his first career grand slam in that game, a go-ahead, you know, grand slam in the fifth inning that helped Hanshin get past Hiroshima 7-3 at Koshien, and that made Joe Gunkel the winner, even though Joe didn't have one of his best outings and left after five innings. So I thought that was pretty neat, and it's good to hear a guy like Gunkel, who didn't pitch in the major leagues and really hasn't had a lot of fanfare, and you could sense no jealousy at all. I felt like it was all sincere, and his attitude was, this guy can help me get wins, man. I'm rooting for him. You know, that's the little spin, the spin rate, not spin rate, but the little spin that I heard. Yeah. In that. And I thought that was really cool. And that's, like I said, a lot of guys come into camps and preseasons with a little bit different agenda sometimes, but I think that gives you a little bit of insight into why the Hanshin Tigers are really functioning as a, as a unit really well at the moment is because they're rooting for each other, in that respect.
Yep. I've said it before. When the Tigers are doing well, no team does as well as the Tigers when they're doing well. And the problem, of course, is when things don't go as well as everybody thinks they should, then there's trouble. Then they are the experts of scapegoatism. They are the absolute masters of finding fault with people.
Snacking on their young, baby.
Yeah. You know, Matt Merton had that famous line when he was basically the chosen...
chosen scum?
Well, let's not go that far. But when he was essentially the cause for all ills,
mm-hmm.
from his second season, he said, I have a way of finding myself on the front page of the paper, whether I do well or badly.
Mm.
You know, if they need somebody to blame for last night's loss, there I am. I didn't put that part, but that was that was what was implied.
Right. Yeah. Well, you want to transition and talk about the Tigers?
Yes. Let's talk about the Tigers.
All right. The first place Hanshin Tigers. And that actually sounds good to say now, even though it's still May. Mm-hmm. That sounds good to say. It feels good to say that they're playing 700 ball. 706 is their winning percentage as we sit here on Sunday night. That's really good, obviously. You've got Sato doing this, and this was shocking for me. I was watching the game on Friday between the Bay Stars and the Tigers, mm-hmm. and DeNA first-year skipper Daisuke Miura elected to walk Sato in favor, and I think he walked the bases loaded in favor of facing Jerry Sands in what turned out to be a 12-6 win for Yokohama. So it paid off, but I thought that was a wow moment because I think Sands probably had similar thoughts. Like he's not walking a Japanese guy to face the foreigner. That doesn't make sense. And, we can talk about Sato. Obviously you talked about him last week. I think he must be listening to the podcast because he got more singles this past week and fewer strikeouts and helped him win today 3-2. And, you've got that going. You've got the Sands thing going. You've got this other thing that's happening with Hanshin and that they're going to have they do have an issue because they've got all these talented outfielders now who can't all obviously start at the same time. They've got Sands. Mel Rojas Jr. made his debut this past weekend. They've got Sato. They've got Koji Chikamoto in center. Yoshio Itoi hit a two-run home run today, helped them win that game. Then they have some other guys who, mostly part-time guys, pinch hitters, defensive replacements, but they've got a stable of those guys as well. Now they had to deactivate Yusuke Oyama because of a back issue. I guess it was back. He had tightness. So there's the question. Now they shifted Sato to third base to play there, but when Oyama gets healthy and gets back, because he was batting cleanup mostly for them, that could be an issue when you have all that talent that you have to juggle. So where does Oyama play? Where does Rojas play? Do you keep all those pitchers on the roster? Do you send them down after they make a start and bring somebody up who can help you every day? I mean, they've got a lot of juggling to do. But in the meantime, like I said, they're playing 700 ball. They're winning. Everything seems to be working right. They're not playing outstanding defense by any means, but they're playing adequate enough defense. So I really like what I'm seeing. They're getting pitching performances from guys like the rookie Masashi Ito, who just turned 25 on May 8th, and he came out of the corporate leagues, and he's 3-0 from the start of the season, and he's the first Tigers rookie starter to do that since Chikafusa Ikeda, who's a regular on Pro Yaku News that we both like to watch, and he did it 37 years ago, winning his first three decisions from the start of the season. So they've got a lot of things working. What are you seeing?
Same as above. I mean, first of all, they did have difficulties with, say, Akinami at shortstop.
Mm.
and not that, you know, I don't think he has the tools of somebody like Goichi Adachi of the Buffaloes.
Uh-huh.
He's a fantastically physically really talented player, but he makes the same sort of routine mistakes. And that's been a problem. He's shown he can be a decent offensive player, but he's just never sort of all there. And the mistakes, as I said, what happens when things go wrong? They find a scapegoat. He was one of the scapegoats for their season last year with all the errors. And, you know, he made a ton of errors in 2019 as well. So it's sort of like, he's the guy who is out, and I think it was going to be hard for him to come back from that. And so now it's going to be harder because, well, until he starts making errors, Takuma Nakano, their sixth round draft
choice,
is going to be the guy because he looks like a pretty good player.
Yeah.
So that's a big thing because that was kind of a hole for them. This is one of the Tigers' problems is that when they have a good player, they get angry when he's not better. And they've run so many really good players into the ground on one side, and on the other side, they've let players who were really, really good in the minors stay in the minors because they don't think they're any good. So, you know, I mean, think of all the outfielders the Tigers have had these just been really, really good at scouting outfielders. But they just don't seem to know what to do with them once they got them. And so that's always a problem. And I think the role of the media is a problem with that too, because it's almost like every team move is like sending the guy to a fortune teller, you know, and saying, oh, you're doomed.
Oh, no. You
know, because this is the media. And the best thing about the team is not the players. I don't think – I mean, I love the players, but I think the best thing about the team is manager Akihiro Yano.
Mm-hmm.
And his ability to downplay things on the Tigers. I mean, he sounds very serious when he's talking with the media. He's very calm and he's very precise. But, you know, the bit with Sato batting cleanup, in which the announcers on TV practically, I had to push the non-drool button to keep the moisture from leaking out of the TV.
Whoa. Somebody give me a towel.
Exactly. Because the TV was leaking from all this spewage from the TV announcers. Oh, there's Sato. Yeah. There's Sato batting fourth, and he's hit a home run. And there's Sato batting fourth again, and the Tigers are going to win with Sato batting fourth. And they asked Yano at the end of the game, why did you not, like, you know, anoint him, coronate him, you know, roll out the red carpet for him?
Oh, yeah. Your topic from last week, yes. Yeah.
And he said, like, it's not a big deal. You know, so there was that. And he did it again this week. And he's done that with Fujinami. And he did it with Sato the other day when he made a base running error. You know, when he was caught off base, and he said, like, you know, it's almost like they expect the Tigers manager to roast the players for every mistake. And he said, we'll learn from it. You know, that's the part of the process. Like, end of story. It's like, and you could almost hear the reporter saying, well, you're no fun.
Well, yeah. You're supposed to we're supposed to put him up on the cross right now. We got the cross already.
Yeah, I know. We got the crucifixion ready. What are you waiting for?
Yeah.
Didn't they just? I guess he missed those lessons in Tigers managing school.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I look at the team, and like we talked about last week when we had the high heat comment. I was thinking about it this past week, and I'm like, you know, they're really functioning without a quote unquote ace, because Yuki Nishi really isn't pitching like an ace. And we know Fujinami was just thrust into the opening day starter position, but he's not an ace. And there just is no one guy who you say, okay, well, that's the guy who's going to start. Well, they probably, I mean, Nishi probably would start game one of a playoff series if we were to go soon. But ace, you know, that ace kind of level pitching, they're not getting that from anybody in particular, yet there are really no cracks in that rotation. Everybody they have up there is more than adequate of pitching, you know, a quality start, a high quality start, even a shutout on any particular night, even the Tin Man.
Yeah, I think,
Ching Wei Ying.
I think they're ace by committee, you know, which, to use an analogy, because that's, I mean, Nishi, I agree with you. Nishi would be the starter because based on his most consistent command and most consistently good stuff. But we, you know, we've watched him for years with Oryx, and he's been the same pitcher with Hanchin, in which he'll go through streaks of 6 or 7 weeks where nobody in the league pitches better than him.
Mm-hmm.
And then he'll go through another 3 or 4 weeks where something else happens. You know, it's like bad luck piles up and he starts pitching badly and then he snaps out of it, goes on to another streak. And that's been Nishi's trademark. I don't want to think he's streaky, but I think it's been weird. I don't think it's related to, you know, any sort of this, there's no sort of mental
right,
I'm just saying this has been his track record, you know. So Takumi Akiyama is terrific, and
president of the Handsome Men's Club.
Koyo Aoyagi is terrific. I mean, he throws. I like the stuff.
I really like him for
a side armor because he's deceptively fast for a side armor. You don't expect to see that, but every now and then he can really bring it. So, but they're such a multi. Somebody said it very well on one of the broadcasts this week. Their pitching staff is so multidimensional. Every starting pitcher gives you a different look. And I think that's a big part. Well, I don't know if that's a big part, but that's a fun part of their success, is that the pitching staff is so variable.
Yeah, and they're mostly right-handed. Chen being the...
Ito is a lefty.
Ito, yeah. Masashi Ito. But he has 4 starts and 3 wins, but I'm not sure he was in the rotation at the very beginning, but he's there now and he's making his presence felt. So, and I just wonder when the back tightness and that issue, I was looking at a story. I didn't read it all today about him going to the farm team and them hoping he can get back, you know, him saying he's going to try to get back as quickly as possible, but it looked like he was, you know, working out and doing everything baseball wise and not resting. And I remember talking to Tyrone Woods, a former Dragon slugger, a long time ago. And he said, every time I hear about somebody getting deactivated, they're down playing on the farm team. So I don't know what it means to be injured and be on the farm. So we'll keep an eye on that to see where Oyama gets back.
That's a fun dynamic in Japan. The whole idea of being injured is sort of like an out of action is a call to practice harder than the fit guys on the first team do.
Yeah, to go down to the farm and work on things.
Yeah.
And get healthy. Get healthy and work on things.
Rest and practice at the same time.
Yeah. All right. Well, we certainly appreciate Joe talking to us, and the Tigers look really like a contender. Just like Joe said, they're going to be going toe-to-toe with the Giants for the rest of the season. So we'll obviously keep an eye on that, and hopefully we can talk to some more Tigers players as the season goes on. And now that I've made contact with the Hanshin PR guys, I say to you guys, I'll be talking to you again soon, hopefully.
Like first contact. You know, and you're amazed that they speak a human language.
Well, I don't want to tell the story about how this went along, but it was wow, these guys are not contacting me, and now all of a sudden the phone rang. So, yeah, that's, however it happens, it happens. So let's move along. Let's make a 4-seam transition and play everyone's favorite game show, guess the best.
I'm not playing this month. I'm going to pick my best because I've given up on trying to guess what they're going to do. And I will admit that when they change sponsors from the main company of Nippon Seime to a subsidiary, they got better. So I'm not going to worry about it.
They get better.
I'm
okay.
Pick my best players of the month and just leave it at that.
All right. Well, this is the top performers of each month, and they're announced. Usually, this announcement this time should be, if you're listening to the podcast on Monday, it should be tomorrow on Tuesday. So we'll look out for that. And it's always the second week after the month ends that they make the announcement. So hopefully. I'll try to guess because I'll play along. I don't mind playing games. and you guys, listeners, you guys can play along too. In fact, why don't you guys try to guess who will be named by the voters or the unnamed voters? and you can do it. In fact, I get the email. It comes right to my phone. So that'll be the official time is when they send it to my phone. But if you hit me up on Twitter, I'll check the timestamp and make sure it came out before the official announcement. And you guys can play along, too.
Yeah.
Just send it anytime. I think the announcements usually come where the release is usually about 1:30, 2 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon Japan time.
That's about right.
And your prize will be a shout-out on Twitter.
Yep. I got one of those ones from John once, and it was well worth it.
So, see, the valuable stuff. All right, so let's start in the Central League since we talked to a Central League player this week. And Jim, your top offensive player for the end of March and April period.
Well, yeah. I'm gonna my first choice is Munetaka Murakami.
I knew you would say him.
You knew I would. I know you would.
And I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to say that.
Well, that's all right.
I figured there was a high probability that you would say that.
Yeah, there is. But I also have to respect what Yosuke Kikuchi did for the Hiroshima Carp. He was almost as good an offensive player as Murakami was while, being Kikuchi and playing, second base. Like only Kikuchi can play it. I should say like only he can now, but he plays second base now, not as well as he used to, which is to say he still plays it better than almost everybody else has ever played there.
Huh. And I'm curious why you would say that he was almost as good as productive as Murakami offensively.
Well, offensively he wasn't.
Because
he didn't reach bases often. He didn't hit for power as well. Basically, that's
it. But there's one thing that you really really like that you always talk about, and that's runs scored.
I do.
And he had more runs scored, and he had more hits, total hits,
which I don't really care about. But yeah.
Oh, you don't care about them. But it is offensive production, right?
Yeah, but that's like saying. There's 52 cards in the deck, and so they're all worth the same.
No, it is.
If you've got 52 hits, but some of them are queens and some of them are twos, they're not all the same.
They're not all the same hits, but I mean, I don't know, man. I think if you have an all-around game, I mean, yeah, you hit with power and you get on base, but if you're just standing there, I mean. Kikuchi stole more bases, obviously. He scored more runs, which you really like.
I do. But, of course, he also is going to score more runs because he bats at the top of the order instead of in the middle.
Well, you can't blame him for batting at the top of the order and scoring runs. That's production.
No.
But anyway, I'm
also,
picking.
But like RBIs, it's also a function of where you bat in the order.
So you're just crediting slugging and hitting hard. But fewer hits, but harder hits for more offensive production.
I'm just saying that I like scoring runs, and I think it's really, really important. But you also have to recognize that the run scoring opportunities decline as the guys behind you can drive you in decrease. The number of guys behind you who can drive you in decrease. So
okay, All right.
It is that is part of the equation is where you bat in the order. I mean,
I understand. Like, yeah, remember when I talked about it being so happenstance that you can come up in baseball, you just happen to be the guy at the plate with the winning runs on base, and you're productive in that particular situation. But it's really random. I understand that, but you know, hitting almost 60 points higher and. Yes, you have more hits, you score more runs, and you steal more bases, and you don't strike out as much, and you do a lot of positive things offensively. But I think it's harder to be productive actually with more at bats because you have more opportunity to fail in a sport where you fail a lot. But anyway, I like Kikuchi. I think they're going to go with the same. I see. Murakami is a dark horse because of the homers and the RBIs, and he has so many of them. But I think they're going to go with Kikuchi because he hit over 350, and that's pretty special.
Well, they like that, yeah. They like the guys with the big batting average. So,
okay, what about pitcher?
The pitchers also, I'm a little split. I like
a little split or a lot. You Rumpelstiltskin?
Well, no,
or you just Rumpel.
I'm split like Ryoji Kuribayashi's forkball.
Oh, okay, all right.
I'm split between a reliever, which is he just had such a marvelous start that it's really hard. You know, he's a sentimental favorite, and then there's the standard favorite, which is Yuki Takahashi for going 5-0. With everything else being good, but he's not the kind of, you know, he doesn't have the other things that go with a guy who's the big number one. So I'm torn between those two. I think I don't want to take away from a guy who pitched really well, but I like both of those guys, and I'd be difficult for me to pick one over the other.
Yeah, I'm gonna go with Takahashi because he's a giant, of course, and I think that's what they're gonna go with. Although our guest this week, Joe Gunkel, was 4-0, he did really well. Takahashi going 5-0, I think that just wraps it up. And I think we learned our lesson in the past. If you get 5 wins in a month, that's like special territory. That's like we talked about last week.
I think he'll win. I think Takahashi will win because he went 5-0. I agree with you, but. But I liked him regardless. I thought he was, you know, I still liked him for what he did. You know, the Giants have a good defense, which is part of that. And it's also part that, you know, they score. I mean, he didn't allow runs, but they still scored 5.5 runs a game when he pitched. So Joe Gunkel had a similar thing. He didn't allow runs, but they were scoring close to 6 runs when he pitched. So.
So thank you very much. I'll take these wins.
Exactly.
I'll be collecting W's.
There's nothing wrong with that. I mean, you don't make it sound like it's a bad thing. I did give Mike Bolsinger some stick when he went 4-0 with about a 4.0 ERA because his team was scoring 10 runs a game 1 month. But and Ayumu Ishikawa went 3-1 with a 0 ERA, but you know, couldn't because they didn't score runs behind him.
Right. All right, let's move along to the Pacific League. Who do you have as the offensive player?
The offensive player. Hold on,
this is a fun exercise.
This
right
is
here.
A hard one. Yes. Again, I have two, and it's sort of like they're two different kind of guys. One is Leonis Martin, and the other is Kensuke Kondo.
Wow. All right.
They're a little bit two different sides of the coin. They're both multidimensional offensive players. Kondo's, of course, the big on base percentage, but that wasn't his big thing. His big thing in April was that late power. You know, he just switched on the power that weekend that the Fighters played the Eagles at Tokyo Dome, which oddly enough. Oddly enough,
he says.
Yes, funnily enough, as Michael Church used to be fond of saying. So I like those two. I think those two guys were the best. The Pacific League was not a big April and March was not a big month for Pacific League hitters. So,
yeah, I thought you were going to just go with the guy who had the highest average and who's fairly productive, and that was Shogo Nakamura of the Lotte Marines. And
yeah, I have a problem. You know, I have a problem picking any of the Marines actually, because it's sort of like a, you know, it's not like picking a needle out of a haystack. It's like choosing which piece of straw in the haystack is the main one, because that's a big stack of hay. That's a lot of production over there. And picking one guy, I feel bad, because I feel like picking out one guy is a slur to the other good hitters, because there's a lot of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think for me, Nakamura was going to be on the list, and I thought obviously these guys didn't make your list, but Yuri Spiel Graciel, who, oh man, he got injured on Saturday, and oh man, he ripped up going into second base head first. He ripped up his right hand, the ring finger. It has some kind of weird fracture I've not heard of and don't want to hear about because it sounds painful, and then damaged some ligaments in the middle finger. But he had a good first month there, even though he didn't play every game and was really productive. And then Nakamura. So I don't know where they go. They've got all the, you know, typical sexy numbers, but nobody like really tearing up, you know, the league in terms of, oh, this is definitely the guy. So yeah. I think they've got a lot of work to do to figure this one out.
Yeah, I think it's one of those months where I think there's a lot of good candidates, and I won't be annoyed if, you know, if they pick. I won't be annoyed if they pick.
Sounds like you're trying to convince yourself not to be annoyed right here, right now. Because you could be annoyed. It sounds like you could be annoyed if things don't work out. You know, some guy who's not on the list at all ends up.
That's Jim 2000. That's the 2000 version of Jim. The
2000? Really? Because I heard him on this podcast.
Version, the 2021 version. Well,
I've heard that Jim on the podcast, and we started this in 2011.
But the difference is you don't hear it every week like you used to.
Well,
to be the feature.
Put that grumpy old fool in the closet and lock the door.
Hashtag high heat.
Old fool. Well, I don't think I was ready for Medicare yet, but yeah.
You didn't hear anything about locking the door. You heard grumpy old fool and you stopped there, huh?
Yeah, I heard the guy at the elder home for analysts. You know, yelling at all the young punks with their will to win stuff on. Get off of my lawn.
That's right. And stay off. All right. Well, I'm going to go Shogo Nakamura of the Marines and see how he does. What about pitcher?
I'm going to go with Hideaki Waku.
So am I.
Yeah. No home runs, 1.51 ERA. You know, pitched well, got good results. You know, I could be just annoying and go for Yoshinobu or Yamamoto because he was just so excellent, despite the fact that he didn't win games. But
yeah,
exactly.
Got to win games.
You do kind of have to win games. So.
Yeah, yeah. I'm going with Wakui as well, and for me it was Wakui, Okona, Takahashi, Osebu, and I guess when you have a ERA that's better by about a full run,
yeah.
You're going to get the nod, and they pitched about the same number of innings, and Wakui, he has actually been a little bit better than most of the guys out there. So I went with him, or I'm going with him, and I think that he's going to get the nod because he went 4-0 as well. So did Takahashi. Yamamoto was, you know, of course, the way I do this, and I think I've said this on the show before, is I sit there and I look at it and I think, okay, who comes to mind? I don't look at the numbers first. I say, who comes to mind? I put the names down in my iPhone and then I look up the numbers and see if I'm matching up with what really happened or what actually happened. And for Wakui, I put his name down and I put Takahashi down and they both came up near the top. And then I looked into the numbers and I saw that Wakui had a little bit better numbers and the ERA was just outstanding. So I think he's going to get it.
Okay. I wanted to ask you something. Did you know? So Yoshio Itoi has hit two home runs now. He started two games. He's hit a home run in each game. And did you see his home runs?
I saw, I saw the one today I was watching, and then the one.
Did you see his home run celebration the other day on Friday?
I did not.
It was, you know what? He hadn't practiced. He didn't know what to do. And he'd been watching Santo. So he went up to the camera at the end. He went up to the camera and he went to point at the camera and he went like, I give up. he stuck his index finger out like he was going to do something with it. And he says, I'm good. And walked away.
Well, I like the Dragons.
Today he flexed, you know. Now he's like, okay, I'm going to flex.
Yeah. I saw that. He kind of flexed it with the pink. That pink with the gray, if it didn't have that yellow in there with the Tigers yellow, but that gray and pink really looked good today. All right, well, we'll make a two-seam transition and talk about something that we hit in the Joe Gunkel interview and something I want to delve into a little bit if I get a chance to do a story. And this past week, our buddy Claudio Rodriguez of Baseball Japonés tweeted out a portion of an interview that he did with Jose Lopez, in which Lopez states why he didn't play in MPV this year, even though Jose said that there was interest from this side. And we already know that Adam Conley decided not to join the Rakuten Eagles. I think we talked about the fact that Brandon Dixon of Oryx decided not to play in Japan this year. Again, all coronavirus-related hassles, if you could put it that way, of not being able to be with family or whomever for an extended period because of people not being able to travel and travel restrictions and whatever we've got going on. And so I understand, and I know it's a cultural thing in Japan that after the war or even during the war, a lot of men, Japanese men, came to Tokyo and they lived alone and they worked and they sent money back home to wives and kids. And that seemed to continue way into the 80s and even the 90s when the bubble was here, the economic bubble that blew up, so to speak. It popped. And so it's kind of not really a cultural outlier to do that. People come to Tokyo, they work, they send money back home. And I say people, it could be men, it could be women, but it's just something you have to do. You just sacrifice. And so I don't think the Japanese culture looks at this thing as an issue in that at least, you know, why won't these players come over and play? They signed a contract. It's just different. It's just different. We look at it differently. And I wasn't shocked to hear Jose Lopez didn't want to make the commitment to come over here and just be isolated again. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that this is, I mean, we've got players who are playing and they're alone. I think most of them are alone. From what I heard, there's only a couple players, including Brandon Laird, who have all their family over here. And the rest of the guys, including a bunch of players who have new babies or young children, young toddlers, are playing and they're here, but they're separated. So this really is an issue.
Stephen Moya had an interesting answer because people asked if he came early so he could make sure to be on camp on time. He says, I came early because I knew I could get here with my family.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
And Kevin Krohn may be in a similar situation because he came in December, I think. So,
yeah. So, I understand that this thing is not such a cultural outlier here in Japan, but when men did this before, they didn't do it internationally. They were coming from another part of Japan and they didn't do it during a pandemic when you have the added worry of wife and children or somebody getting sick or something like that. So yeah, I'm hearing many players want as much to be, that can be done to be done to assist them to get their families over here. And I don't know that it's anything that the teams can actually do. They can just go and keep knocking on the door of the government and say, hey, you know, can we make an exception here? Can this person be exempt? Can this person come over? Can this person bring their families? But so good luck to the players with that. But I know it's a hardship in that respect because, you know, if I was gone home for 10 days to do this earlier this year, and that was hard. So you're talking about playing a whole season of baseball and having fans yell at you when you strike out or do something bad or, you know, have something negative happen. That's hard. That's really hard. And you heard Joe Gunkel say in the interview, you know, it's hard when you, it's okay when you're at the stadium, but when you go home and you don't have anyone to share anything with, that makes it harder. So I understand. I definitely understand.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That is hard. And family is really a lot of the guys come to play in Japan to improve their skills. But at the bottom of that, they come to have a better life with their families. And so if the family's not, you know, it changes the equation.
Definitely, definitely. All right, making a seamless transition, if it's possible. Mm-hmm. It's time for our weekly As the Pitch Turns Masahiro Tanaka review of his pitching. And he pitched on Saturday again. Looks like he's locked in on that particular day, at least for a while, until the next injury or what do we have, the next break before the interleague play or the interleague session begins. But he lost to the Fighters. He is now on Saturday. He is now 2-2. The Fighters beat him 4-1. He lasted 7 innings. I don't really know how he bobbed and weaved through 7 innings. He gave up 8 hits, struck out 5, had 1 walk. No hit batters this week. He didn't hit any shoelaces. gave up 4 runs. And both of his losses this year are to the Fighters. And that is just odd to me. the team that has struggled the most in the Pacific League, and he can't seem to beat them. Although they had chances to score runs and at least get him off the hook. But one of my favorite characters in NPB, Kenshi Sugiya, who just on Friday night, this is him in a nutshell. His first hit of the season is a home run that he really just exploded on and hits a home run on Friday. And then later in that game, he squeezed home a run with the most dangerous looking bunt I've seen in a long time. You know, not only did he square around and have his thumbs, it looked like on the front of the bat. It looked like at least they were on the top, but it looked like he stuck his nose right behind the pitch. And had he fouled that thing off, it would have gone right into his face and just, he would have just needed to call doctors and hospitals to do plastic surgery for years. I mean, but he got the bunt down and got the run in. It was amazing. So he had a hit and a steal on Saturday and helped bring down Makun. And again, I didn't sit down and I wasn't able to watch the entire game and every pitch, but I did glance up a lot at the screen and the expression that Makun had. He wore this look of consternation and dissatisfaction with himself. And I hope he's healthy, but he didn't look physically, he didn't look like he was having a good time. What did you see, Jim?
Well, I saw, and you can find on my blog, I think it's Tanaka Volume 4, Episode 4, something such. I break down his pitches. I also interpreted, I did a transcription of what he said in his YouTube video on the ride back to Sapporo. I guess he was riding back from Sapporo Dome to the team's hotel. And my view was he couldn't locate his splitter. His changeup was also, which is also a forkball, was also completely unreliable.
Mm-hmm.
And so those two things were really obvious. The slider was pretty good. You know, he throws basically two sliders, a little tight spin horizontal slider and a big dropping diving slider. And both of those were pretty good, although the location was came and went. The big thing to me, in addition to the lack of a splitter, was that he was throwing fastballs where he wanted them, but guys were squaring them up.
Mm.
So that's a problem. You know, if you're hitting your spots and they're squaring up your fastball and the velocity was fine, something's wrong. My guess is he wasn't getting the right amount of, you know, he said after the game that he tried to, he started using his two seamer for the first time in a game here, and that helped sort of change the dynamic of the at-bats. And he also changed the axis of the spin on his pitches. I guess he went, which to me was almost a obvious thing to do, because I guess he wasn't getting enough spin, or his spin was not, his off was somehow off on his fastball, and he was getting side spin instead of back spin. That would be my biggest guess for his fastball, but I'm not a pitching coach, so just ignore most of that stuff. But I did see, yeah, the splitter was not there. The fastballs looked really straight, and he couldn't throw his changeup either. So those things were all there. And the one play I referenced earlier in the podcast about the, you know, what happens when a guy is looking for a pitch and really tags it. And he threw a really good curveball. I think it was the fifth inning. He threw a really good curveball to Kensuke Kondo, but he was sitting on it. And he just golfed it over the center field wall. And Kondo was going, I knew he made good contact. I didn't think it was going to go out. But you could see he was pretty much looking for a curveball. But it was down at the knees. It was a fine curveball. I mean, it wasn't Clayton Kershaw's special or anything, but it was. No, it was a very useful pitch, but he...
Yeah, he was trying to get a strike with it, and sure, and it got struck. Yeah,
but it was at the knees. It's not like... It's a ball...
Yeah, you didn't hang it, but it could have been lower. Yeah. Well, he was just trying to get a strike, so...
Yeah, I mean, it was the bottom of the end of the strike zone, and so it's not one that you typically see get hit out of the park, but there you go.
Yep. Well, like I said, what was it, a calf injury that that slowed him down at the beginning?
Yeah. I don't think that's an issue, but I think he's having trouble adjusting to the Japanese hitters a little bit. You know, I think he's got a little bit of that major league, why aren't you taking bigger swings at my pitches, you know, kind of thing.
Mm.
I think he's still got that a little bit. I also wondered, this comes under the heading of pseudopsychology, if he's just not used to pitching every once a week anymore.
Hmm.
And that he's maybe a little too, he's a little stronger than he is. But he went, you know, when he got back to Japan, he went to the long bullpens and everything. So I don't know. But I heard he was, you know, in spring training, he talked about things that he wasn't going to do differently than, you know, like he wasn't going to take to the field as early as the Japanese pitchers do, because he hadn't done it in years in New York. Before a game, he wasn't going to be out on the field with the team as early,
right?
As right. other pitchers are on days he pitches. So,
yeah. Well, give him some more time. All right. Let's hope he is healthy. That's number one. And speaking of health, I already mentioned Graciel of the SoftBank Hawks, and we saw Yomi Rie's Tomoyuki Sugano. He was deactivated this past week. Discomfort in the right elbow. Now, from what I heard, the reports were saying that Tatsunori Hara, the manager, thought he just needed to skip a turn and he'd be all right, just give it some rest. But he's a marquee pitcher in MPB, so that's worrisome news for me. So I'm going to keep an eye on that. And his teammate, the shortstop, Hayato Sakamoto, got injured going back to the base head first today and fractured a finger. He was deactivated, and I'm looking at a story now, they just really don't even know when he's going to be back. And Graciel, I think I saw 1 month for him, but that, I mean, the tendon, to be honest, I don't know how bad that fracture was, but the tendon too, that's just a messed up hand. And I was listening to Kenta Aoshima. You remember him? He used to be on NHK.
I haven't heard from him in a long time.
Yeah, we haven't been out to ballparks since last year, but I haven't seen him at ballparks since, I don't know, I talked to him at Tokyo Dome in the dugout one day. But he used to be on TV on NHK with Wayne Grosick, bless his soul. They used to do ESPN highlights on NHK long, long ago, back in the 90s in the day. But he was on the radio broadcast for the Tigers Bay Stars game today. I was listening to that game on the radio. And somebody in that game also went to first, sliding head first at first base and jammed something or hurt something and came out of the game eventually. And Aoshima was saying, MPB players, stop all the head first sliding. And this is, you know, three guys left games this weekend here.
Wow.
With injuries.
Well, I heard that.
At least three guys, no fewer than three.
I heard that Hayato Sakamoto went into the bag head first. Let me ask you a question, John.
Yes, sir.
You know I'm pointed when I use your name.
Yes, well, you're teeing me up too then.
How often when a guy is trying to go back to first base on a pickoff throw, does he slide feet first?
You know, I got to be honest. I don't think you have even half the momentum built up when you're going back to first. So even though the answer to your question is never.
But that's not quite true. I have seen it, but it's usually from guys who are like a half a step from the bag.
Yeah, okay. Guys who are not trying to steal bases, yeah. They walk back to the bag. But actual base stealers or somebody caught leaning,
yeah,
they're usually going back head first.
Yeah, you see that on a pickoff play about once a year where the guy jams a digit against the bag.
Well, I think Graciel jammed it and got stepped on, and I didn't see the Sakamoto play and the Bay Stars game. I don't remember who it was because there were three games on the screen and I was working, but jammed the wrist or something.
I got to do a Wayne Grassi. Cut out that work stuff.
You think?
He used to say that to me. He'd be going, it's like, you're not writing enough on your own. He says, why don't you just take that Yomiuri job and just tell him to shove it somewhere?
Yeah. Thanks. But no comment. So anyway, you get to the base faster when you're going to first base anyway if you run through the bag. Diving on the ground only slows you down. I don't know why they do it so much. It's supposed to indicate some kind of hustle or something. To me, it indicates a lot of foolishness. Just run through the bag. And Graciel injured himself going back to second base. So he was not in that. I didn't see the Sakamoto injury, but I'll take a look at it when I watch Pro Yaku News tomorrow. Jeez, I just wish these guys, just listen to Aoshima and don't run. Go flying head first in the bag when you can avoid it. Please, guys, please.
Well, you know, I'm surprised they haven't started using these oven mitts like they're using in the major leagues on the bases.
Oh, you're right. Well, it'll start next week with all these injuries.
The Giants all be wearing them tomorrow.
They already ordered them. The Amazon guys will be arriving tomorrow.
Yeah.
Just back that truck over here.
Yeah, probably first thing Hara did after the game was sign up for Amazon Prime so they'd arrive tomorrow.
You got it. All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody, for listening. Our High Heat mailbag / comment bag is empty. Empty. So get your fingers out there, stretch, crack your knuckles, and send us some notes. Hit us up on Twitter at JBW Podcast with the hashtag High Heat. Send questions by email, including MP3s, to yakyujohn@gmail.com, or hit us up on the Facebook page and leave us a comment or message or a question there. And look for us on iTunes. Follow, rate, and review, and boost our pod cred, if you will, please. So, Jim, you got anything coming up?
No, this week? Just the regular weekly newsletter on jballallen.com going out momentarily. If you want to get the weekly newsletter, it's free to all subscribers. And so please have a look at that. If you like the podcast, you'll love the newsletter.
All right, everybody, have a good week. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.